Every month we get caught up with our air commissioner, Dr. Mike Strain. He joins us now. Dr. Strain, welcome back. How are you, man?
Thank you, man. I am doing great. The crops are in the field. You know, it's getting a little hot next week.
I wanted to lead with that. Yeah.
And so if you look at it, the majority of corn and beans in the United States are in heat and drought conditions.
Okay.
So like 66% of the total U.S. crop is under stress right now. If you look here in Louisiana, you know, what we're a little concerned, you know, that our soybeans are at the point where they can be really affected if it stays hot. Ideal temperatures is that it's got to get below 95 at night.
Okay.
And so the nighttime cooling is critical.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get up to 102, 103, 104, and you've got it for 5 days and it doesn't cool, it can markedly affect the crop. What happens when it's too hot, you see like on corn, you see the leaves curl.
Yeah.
And that reduces photosynthesis. And what happens is that with either in the fertilization stage, it can be affected, corn, beans, rice, others, but also in what we call the embryonic stage, when we're actually putting the corn kernels in, we're actually putting the seeds in the pod, that can be markedly affected if it's too hot. We've had years where you had these beautiful soybeans, plants, beautiful pods, and no beans. And if you look at, you know, severe conditions with corn, when you're under severe of drought and heat, you can actually lose 1% of your crop every 4 hours.
Oh, wow.
It's too hot. And so, well, we're not there here.
Yeah.
That is more happening in the Midwest. And so, you know, we're going to see a spike next week, you know, and again, that's through, you know, the row crop corridor in the northern part of the state where we have those 100 to 102 temperatures that go on for 4 days, you know, cooling down at night, but it's getting down into the 80s, but the ground temperature, that's what we measure, the ground temperature.
The heat. I know this is going to sound like a stupid question, but I have to ask it.
Mm-hmm.
We as humans are affected by the heat index.
Absolutely.
That feels like temp.
Absolutely.
Are crops affected by the heat index?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you have to look at, you have to combine heat, humidity, moisture.
Right.
All together. And they are. And so that's what pushes it. Our crops are affected. You know, at the first stage when they're pollinating, if it's too hot, they don't pollinate. The other part is when the vegetative growth, if it's too hot, then you don't have good photosynthesis. So it stops, the entire system begins shutting down and you don't get the yield that you need. And then thirdly, when you're laying down the actual harvestable part of the crop, if it's too hot, you don't get as much yield. So yes, it is. All species, your livestock are very much affected, just like people. And with livestock, it affects their reproduction. You know, most of our chickens are in climate control.
Mm-hmm.
Climate control. You know, I mean, they live in climate-controlled environments.
Air-conditioned chickens?
Air-conditioned, absolutely, with big fans, you know, just moving the air.
Yeah.
But then what does that do?
Yeah.
Utility cost.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you got to look. It costs to keep chickens cool.
If cost of doing business goes up, the cost of chicken goes up.
Well, not only that, look at our nurseries. You got to pump water. You know, you want to see an electric bill? Go to a nursery and look at it, what it costs. Water is expensive.
How much of our farms in Louisiana, how much of our crops grown in Louisiana draw that water from the Mississippi River?
Well, not as many.
Good.
No, well, because they don't. And so if you look at the Mississippi River, one, you got that great big levee.
Yeah.
Now, we have about 65% of our total acreage in row crops that are irrigated. A lot of that is from water that is in the smaller rivers and the tributaries,
mm-hmm.
and then the rest, of course, is from groundwater, from the aquifers. So it depends on what is available. And so,
it costs to move water. The low level of the Mississippi River, and I know a number of water systems further downriver are run off the Mississippi, low level of Mississippi River is causing the saltwater intrusion.
Upstream, a lot of that is drawn off into agriculture.
Like Missouri and whatnot?
Yes, yeah. But another big deal in the Midwest, we are rapidly depleting those aquifers throughout the entire, quote, heartland of America. Now, they're doing some things to try to be more conservative with water. So now we estimate that we have 35 to 40 years left. You know, before it was 20, but we're rapidly depleting those aquifers. You go out to California.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been in the San Joaquin Valley?
I have not.
And when you do, and if you're out there where they have the crops, you'll notice there are poles and there's numbers and dates. And I, you know, they look like we call them telephone poles. And you see 20 feet up, it might have 1920.
Okay.
That was the level of the ground in 1920.
Oh, wow.
So what's happening in California, they've drained the aquifer so much, the land is collapsing down. I asked them, why don't you have asphalt roads out here so they won't survive? Because the land is subsiding because they've drawn out so much water. And that's a big issue in California.
Well,
because
now Nevada, too, we got a big lesson in Lake Mead.
That's right. So we have to really think more. Now, ideally, we would like to see Mississippi River water go across the Macon Ridge and then come back through Louisiana and recharge our aquifers. Mm-hmm. You know, the recharge, you know, when we put up the levees and we change the direction of the river, we change all of the long-term, you know, hydraulics.
Right.
You know, and so that's a big deal. But we'll use surface water when we can and subsurface when we have to.
So re-asking the question for the just the news story, saltwater intrusion in the Mississippi River.
Is real.
Will it have an effect on our plants or crops?
No, because it's, you know, it's never going to get past New Orleans.
Right.
Now, in the Lake Charles, it can get almost up to the intake. So they build levees at the bottom of the river, you know, 50 feet high and 1,500 feet wide to stop that saltwater intrusion. And that, we see that every few years. Now, the issue of saltwater is a bigger deal if you look on the upper aspects of the Red River and also into the northeast part of Louisiana, where we're getting salt water in the wells and also in rice because, one, of depletion of the aquifer, there's salt water there. And once you pull the fresh water off the top, you start getting salt water. And so one of the things we have to do in agriculture is to analyze these wells because if the salt is too high in the water that we are drawing from the wells, you know, you can't use it. You might be able to use it 1 year, 2 years, but if you use it heavily, it could be the same as putting 100 pounds of salt per acre. Think about that. So salt is an issue. Saltwater intrusion, saltwater in our aquifers and in our wells is a big deal. And that's why we try to use surface water where we can for a number of reasons. One, we can take that Mississippi River surface water and then we put it into the irrigation canals. We put it on our crops and a lot of it gets evaporated or it gets absorbed. And then a lot, then what's left goes back into the river system much cleaner than we took it in. So we suck out the nitrogen, we suck out the phosphorus. If you look in rice country, most of rice is through water systems. They developed that after the Civil War when rice came here. They developed these water delivery systems using canals. And so we take, quote, dirty water and we turn out clean water. And that's a big deal in rice country. So the use of surface water in agriculture is great because, one, it evaporates. Two, it helps recharge the aquifer. Three, we can harvest the nutrients out of the Mississippi River that help decrease the hypoxic zone. Think about that. What do plants need? Phosphorus, nitrogen, right? No. They need sediment, and we can utilize that in the crops. And so, as we say, and that's a big deal. You take in dirty water, you turn out clean water, and, of course, we're always looking for any type of credits we can get for doing that, but it's a very big part of what we do.
We're talking with Ag Commissioner Mike Strain. Dr. Strain joins us every month. So while we're talking about temperatures, you mentioned ground temperature overnight. What about water temperature in the Gulf? This is something that
you've been looking at that.
So
the report
Colorado
out of Florida,
State,
did you see that?
Yeah, I saw the report out of Florida. Colorado State re-upped their season prediction for Atlantic hurricanes.
Yes.
Are we at a level of not alarm but concern?
Yes, yes, we are at a level of concern. And, you know, and I'm part of GOSEP, Governor's Office, Homeland Security, and Emergency Preparedness. And so we are, you know, getting ready. We're making sure all our equipment is up to par. You know, our training continues. And so, you know, I'm responsible for, one, pet evacuation if you go into a public shelter. Two, to assist and to help, you know, with large animal evacuation by any methods that we can. We're also responsible to fuel the government and all emergency needs. That's my responsibility to make sure that nobody, you know, in a disaster in the government or emergency needs, you know, for like emergency vehicles, fire departments, hospitals, ambulances, that they have fuel. Then I'm also responsible to work with the fire marshal on fire and then logistics. So we have a lot of different roles that we play. And, of course, we work with health and hospitals on mosquitoes. But if you look, 90 degrees right now in the waters of the Gulf off of Florida, record. The whole idea is not that it's 90, it's a record right now. And what's going to happen next month, you know, August, the end of August, 28th, 29th, right? We've had, you know, bad ones. Think about Katrina. Think about, you know, Ida. You think about that, you know, August, September.
Delta.
You
know, was Delta, Laura was a little earlier. Delta came right in the wheelhouse. Rita and Gustav.
That's right. Katrina, you get into that.
Gustav and Ike.
End of Katrina August, Rita, first few weeks of September. Yep. Right. We're very concerned. You know, what I'd like to see is a few little tropical storms cool that Gulf off.
Okay.
You know, you got to think of the Gulf as a great big lithium or NiCad battery. The sun energizes it. And then when the storms come in, they suck that energy out. And that's what gives the storms that great force.
Okay.
And so, you know, the water temperatures are concerning to us.
So I like this take, though, because you say a tropical storm or two could actually cool the thing back down.
Yeah, just a little tropical storm, you know, or two, get some, you know, get some heat out, get some rain out, get the moisture out. Just, in other words, use that battery up.
Right.
Use that battery
up. I don't know if we want to tempt fate like that, Mike.
I don't want it to sit there and get hotter and more energized.
No, that's
right.
You got to bleed off the
energy.
Yeah.
There was an interesting scientific discussion, and actually, it was by Bill Gates and the Microsoft Group. They were talking about building these massive turbines that would use wave action and would actually pump cold water from the bottom of the Gulf up and put the hot water down.
I've always wondered about this. Like, why in 2023 do we not have that to where we
got to make it a national priority?
Yeah.
You know, but they're going back looking at old technologies. Believe it or not, we're seeding clouds again. We're seeding them in the dry, arid areas, and they're actually squeezing out another 15% moisture in a lot of these areas. You know, that was technology that is, you know, very old now, and now it's coming back, and they're utilizing it more scientifically, but it's actually working. So we need to look at a little science, innovation, and technology and use things that are rational, not irrational, rational, dealing with some type of weather modification and hurricanes. We really need to focus on that. The other thing that's incumbent upon us is to do everything we can to tell everyone, get a game plan.
Yeah.
Right now, you know, what you need to do, you need to know where you're going to go. You need to know what you're going to do. Make sure you have your medical records or a copy if you have them. Make sure you have your pet's medical records. Make sure they are vaccinated. Make sure you have a month's supply of their medication. You got their heartworm preventative, whatever you need for your horses. Now's the time to go check the trailer. Don't wait till you're going to load trigger in the trailer and realize you got two bad tires.
Yeah.
Now is the time to get prepared and get ready because, as you have seen, when we say go, it's time to go.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, because they're moving much quicker. But, again, getting a game plan so it's an evacuation and not a rescue.
What would that take? I'm glad you walked in this path. What would that take to cause someone to evacuate livestock? Like,
well,
how big of a storm does it need to be for
that? You'd look at Katrina,
yeah.
Rita, Gustav, Ike, Ida.
So Cat 3 or better?
Oh, well, it depends on where you're at. If you're down on the coast, you know, mm-hmm. you got to look at the surge and, you know, what the depth of the surge is. And so in many cases, there's not enough transportation to move the livestock off the coast. It just doesn't exist.
But do cows know what to do?
Yes, they do. So you need to put them up on high ground.
Okay.
You got to get them up on the levees. You got to get them on high ground. Now, a lot of the farmers with Ida.
A bunch of cows standing around saying, we're going to ride this out, boys.
No, you open the gates and you kind of show them the direction.
Okay.
They're pretty smart, but you got to head them in the right direction.
Okay. So I was in Texas last Sunday. I spent all last Sunday on the road. I drove to just past Longview, Texas and back. So good stretch on I-20. And there were some back roads through parts of Texas that I drove on. And I saw, this was the craziest thing. Dr. Mike Strain's our guest, by the way. As hot as it was. There's like a big farm with a bunch of cows on it, and all the cows were congregated under the trees.
Absolutely.
Like the cows knew,
they know.
To the shade.
Go to the shade.
The cows knew, go to
and
the
you
shade.
And you need shade for them.
I meant
trees
to take a picture because I wanted to show you that.
Shading areas, you know, we put up shade cloths and that sort of thing. If it's really hot,
fools.
You know, we put up sprinkler systems.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at Hurricane Ida and before that, you know, some of the later storms, the farmers that can move their lives, a lot of them moved them ahead of time. They knew to go. They know it's time to go, especially if you are, you know, in the lower coastal areas.
Yeah.
If you can move them, you need to move them. But if you have 1,000 head,
that's costly.
Oh, it is. The most I ever moved of my own cattle in one day was 650 head, and it took a dozen trucks.
Goodness
and
gracious.
I'm talking about big trucks, as we call them, possum bellies, big trucks, to move them, and it took a 24-hour day with a crew of 25 people. You know, so you just can't, you know, you can't say, all right, y'all get in a trailer. It doesn't work that way. So you need to have a game plan, and if you farm in that area, you need to know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And normally it's to find, all right, where's the highest part of the ground?
Right.
And most of the time we get them up on the levees, and then as quickly as possible we have to get them off.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get them off the levees and back to where they are. But the big deal that, you know, we do, we work with the farmers to get them hay and water and, you know, pumps and that sort of thing. But none of that's covered by FEMA. FEMA does not cover any cost related to livestock. That is under the Farm Bill. And the Farm Bill doesn't do it up front. It's reimbursement to the farmer for losses later. And so we're kind of in the middle, and we work and do the best we can with the Cattlemen's Association, the Farm Bureau, And believe it or not, you know, British Petroleum, Chevron, and others have donated fuel, you know, so that if we got to get fuel to them for airboats or whatever. So we work with whatever systems we can to get the supplies to the livestock. Now, if you've ever seen something, you ought to see us deliver hay with a Chinook, that big helicopter.
Yeah, oh, my.
Now, these are, you know, 2,000-pound bales you roll in the back of this Chinook, right? And then that Chinook's up in the air, and it tilts up, and the bale rolls out. Now, you better be hanging on. Or delivering them, you know, if you know, if you look at these big helicopters, that is an adventure, you know, to deliver hay with helicopters.
I bet it's a sight to see.
Especially if you're in that helicopter hanging on, right? It is a sight to see.
You sure that weighs 2,000 pounds and not an ounce more? Huh?
Oh, no, no, no. And you can do two at a time with them big Blackhawks. Oof. They'll carry two at a time, and you got a guy there that releases it. Yes.
We got a break for news. He is Ag Commissioner Dr. Mike Strain. We will continue next, though. We got a lot more ground to cover here. A couple segments to go here on Mornings with Brian Haldane. So when we have Ag Commissioner Mike Strain in the house, we keep him for the remainder of the show. So we can pick up where we left off. Dr. Strain, we were talking during the break about this glorious picture right here.
How you like
Look
that?
Look at you. You and my guy John Weibel over
here. Yes, and he is running for state rep.
Yep.
So he was there. Great guy, and I think he's currently head of the school board. Is that right?
I believe so, yes.
I think so.
Used to be with CASA.
Really?
Yeah. Right.
Yes. Yes, yes. And that's Dr. Mickey Murphy.
Okay.
And he was the head of the Sullivan Vo-Technical School.
And now the champion of the loudest shirt competition, that's if you're looking at the picture.
Yeah. If you want to see Mickey, you just take out a look. And I've been buying his champion melons for years.
Look at the size of this watermelon.
That is 48.4 pounds. So they said, look, can you pick it up? I said, I can't pick it up and hold it out. I'm doing the best I can hold right there. And look, y'all get these pictures taken. You know, and every year when I buy, because he always has a champion melon, and I said, all right, here's the deal. I'll buy it, but y'all got to help me load it because I got to pack it to the truck. So I went and got my truck and brought it close.
50 pounds of watermelon.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
From a 50-pound watermelon, 48.2-pound watermelon, how much of that is actual melon you can eat?
And
how
much of
that?
The vast majority. And these melons, when you cut them open, the rind is thin.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. And it's all red melon. So over time, you know, doing selective breeding, you know, if you look at the watermelon, if you want to look at some of the pictures from the Renaissance where they show watermelons, if you look at those pictures and early paintings, and you can see the watermelons that when they cut them, they don't look anything like they do today.
Right.
These are magnificent, you know, and of course, you know, we have some hybrid melons, but we have some true line melons. But if you look at that, it is melon all the way through. They're beautiful. They're delicious. And a big deal with these melons, you know, we judge them, but we're also on that table cutting them up, opening them up. We're having watermelon eating contest, seed spitting contest. We're tasting the melons.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that melon, it's weighed, it's looked at, and it's judged. But then right behind there, we've got all those melons in the same families opened up, cut, and we're doing tasting.
How you get that gig?
Oh, well,
I tell you. We had a lot of running on this one.
Well, y'all have to come with me next year because, again, the Watermelon Festival.
Yeah.
Now, at the end of the month, you have the Farmerville Watermelon Festival going on as well. So we have one in Farmerville and one in Washington Parish.
Okay.
And so you have to go to the these festivals.
Washington Parish is known for its watermelons, just like
Show Tangipahoa Farmerville.
Parish, just like Tangipahoa Parish is known for its strawberries.
That's right.
What is it about? Like, I mean, within Louisiana, even within Louisiana, we break down to where
it's
parish by parish. We're known for things.
Soil, okay. Soil conditions, weather conditions, drainage conditions.
Is it
and
that
passion.
Much different?
Yes,
between
sir.
Amy
absolutely.
And Franklinton.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Now you can grow some good good melons and they meet on selective soils.
Mm-hmm.
Take on my farm. We've moved our watermelon patch.
Yeah.
You know, we've moved it twice already and we found a place with the nice kind of sandy soil, a nice slope, a nice drainage. You know, you got to have everything just right to grow those melons. And of course, we're growing it this year on some soil that hasn't really grown any crops in a long time. So some good virgin soil as well.
Okay.
And then, but for watermelons, yes. I mean, to get that champion melon, get it just right, get the taste. There's a lot goes into this. And, you know, and old Mickey, this guy, he's got a PhD.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah, absolutely. He knows what he's doing.
That shirt screams PhD.
Oh, it does, doesn't it? Yes. Yeah.
By the way,
he's got a skull cap on, too, now. You got to understand.
If you're listening on the radio and not watching on Facebook Live, if you're listening on the radio, his shirt it's a Hawaiian-style shirt, but it's all slices of watermelon.
That's right.
So there's a lot of pink and red and green all over this thing.
And he is passionate about
it. Quite the ensemble.
And if you want to see something funny, that watermelon eating contest, and we had the kids,
yeah,
you know, different age groups of kids, and then the spitting contest. And this little boy, about 12 years old, he won the spitting contest. He stood out about 7 feet airborne. You know,
for a watermelon seed?
Yes, indeed. He must have been practicing.
Okay, so if the watermelon is bigger, if the watermelon's weighing 50 pounds, how big are the seeds as compared
to? Pretty nice.
Okay.
Yep. And then again, for the seed spitting, you got to select that right seed. You know, you want a big seed and a little bit of practice. But again, everything there, all in fun.
Yeah.
All in fun at the Watermelon Festival. And there's a tractor show there, car show there, a lot of things. So a lot of activities at these fairs and festivals.
Got to ask you an economic question and realize where this is coming from, because this is something we relate to in Louisiana that I don't know that other states do. Strawberry season, watermelon season, I make sure to have cash on hand, because if I see somebody on the side of the road, I'm buying on the side of the road.
Yep.
From an economic standpoint, is that good for Louisiana, or am I taking
very
things?
Good.
Okay.
No, it's very,
I'm not
very
taking
good.
Things off the books.
No.
Okay.
No. So it's very good, you know, to be a commercial farmer. You know, you have to be able to, you know, to show your income taxes and all that sort of thing. So when you buy from that roadside stand, you buy from off the road, that money circulates through the economy.
Okay.
Very, very, very well. And, you know, a lot of these farmers, they make a little bit of money doing that. Mm-hmm. Again, but it's very, very, very good for the economy. If you look, you know, at the strawberry business, and, you know, if you look at the watermelon business, you put those together, you know, that's $20, $30 million a year.
Yeah.
$20, $30 million
dollars
a year. And I also tell you, if you go to the grocery store, you know, if you're here, as we say with city folks, and you go to the grocery store, look for those local products.
Of course.
Certified Louisiana, right? Specialty crops. That's a specialty crop. That melon is certified Louisiana melon.
Yeah.
And look for that and selectively buy those, because those dollars stay here.
Well, that's one of the reasons when you see somebody with a truck on the side of the road, I don't need to look for certified Louisiana. I can just look at this license plate and I can pretty much tell.
Yep.
So,
yep. And so
in a store, definitely certified Louisiana.
That's
and
right.
And the more local you are when you're at a Mathurin's or.
And if you want a local food economy, you got to buy local food.
Sure.
That's the way it works. And we are working very hard to grow the local food economy. And, you know, whether it's food products or it's nursery products or, you know, soap made from goat milk. Right?
Let's talk about that. That was in the rundown, I'm confused.
It's wonderful.
Goat milk soap.
Absolutely. And so we were out there, you know, on the farm, you know, with the goats, and the goat that I milked was named Rose. And, of course, Miss Erin Tassin, and it's Farm Life Goat Milk. And so you think about this. We're in Grosstead.
Okay.
She's got just a handful of goats, all pets. She milks the goats. Then she makes soap out of the milk, and it's magnificent soap.
Really?
Then she sells that at the farmer's market.
Yes.
And she's doing well enough, as her and her daughter and her husband, but it's mainly her and her daughter, to where she was able to quit her job, and now she makes a living on the farm. Now, her husband works at Exxon.
Okay.
And he makes bass fishing rods. And so they got the little soap factory.
Wait, he makes the fishing rods on the side?
Yes. And it's in their home. And so they're making soaps, and magnificent soaps. And it's you can tell the passion that she has in this. Sells them at the farmers markets and in other areas. And he custom makes these rods. They're like, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
But think about that. In Grosstead, they're making a living, you know, on small acreage doing that. And it shows you, you know, just like all these other specialty crops, if you go out to Frank Fecky's farm, he's on, you know, he's got about 40 acres, the mainly farming 20. They're making a living, right, on small acreage.
Yeah.
Doing these specialty crop things. And, you know, and yesterday, you know, we were out there with Mark Meese looking at his bromelides. They're here in Baton Rouge off George O'Neill Road. It's very small acreage, and he's making these magnificent plants.
Okay.
They are, most of them come from the rainforest. So they are. Oh, yes. So they're very, very, very different. It takes a lot of passion to do that.
Mm-hmm.
These are plants, a lot of them grow on the side of the trees and the rainforest, and it's just beautiful and magnificent.
And they can thrive here?
Yes. Yeah, they can thrive with a little TLC.
Uh-huh.
But some of these, they call them air plants because there's no dirt. They live, you know, they live in the air. They can survive off the moisture in the air. And if you think about, like, the Venus fly traps and these other types of products, that catch insects. That's where they get their nitrogen from. It's from the insects that they catch. But these plants are magnificent because they're tropical.
Right.
And they look different than anything you and I have ever seen. A lot of color. Mm-hmm. Huge amount of color. Because why the color? That's what attracts the insects.
That's them?
That is them. Look at the look at how magnificent. Right, have you ever seen anything like that?
Let me
like
get
that?
This one over to Alondra. We'll put that point up on the big screen as well.
Beautiful. And from time to time, they'll be at the Botanical Garden. They're across from State Police and have sales and sell those products.
I mean, that's gorgeous. It's got more pink and green than your Doc's shirt
up here. Absolutely. And look at some of those. I saw plants there I've never seen before. And, of course, you know, this is a gentleman. You know, he's a horticulturist, and he knows what he's doing. He's a retired attorney. And this is his passion. But again, everything you see, that's Mickey's passion.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Ms. Tassan, that soap is
goat
her passion.
Goat milk soap.
Goat milk soap. And it's good for your skin. You see a lot of goat milk soap. A lot. Yes. Go to the farmer's market.
I'm there. I'm there.
And there's all these different scents and everything. And mm-hmm. so you see these products. And then you can see some of these plants, you know, things that you never had before. So you know, you need to have one. You can, you know, put it somewhere out on the porch. It doesn't need to ever be watered. You know, some of these don't. Now, some do require a lot of water. Some don't.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very different, very tropical, and very beautiful.
Every single time. We get hit with something new every single time. Today, I was just planning on talking about the local economy and certified Louisiana products, and he hits me with goat milk soap.
Certified Louisiana goat milk soap. Certified. That program is growing huge. We have more than 600 members now in the Certified Louisiana family. So we tell you, when you go shopping, look for that certified, fresh,
always looking,
local,
always
certified
for,
Louisiana.
Always looking for certified Louisiana. And that does not change when you're talking about goat milk soap. He's Ag Commissioner Mike Strain. Going to stick around with us for one more segment. Ag Commissioner Mike Strain is in the house. Dr. Strain joins us once a month to bring us up to speed. It started off as one segment, and then it just became like, no, you got to stick around. No, you got to stick around. Yeah. No, you got to stick around.
I'll bring my lunch. We'll be here all day.
We're
going to keep talking.
Well, we got to hand off the moon at some point. So
why? Why we got to hand off the moon?
You know,
look, look, we'll just tell Moon, look, you just got to have a break today.
No.
Right? You and I will do Moon segment.
The thing is, just because you take away Moon's microphone doesn't mean he stops talking.
Well, that's true. He probably gets louder. So you could probably hear Moon. I hope you're listening, Moon. Probably hearing without the microphone, right? He can just go ahead and project into the airwaves.
From KPEL to here.
That's right.
Just across the Atchafalaya, we can hear Moon Griffon, which, by the way, programming note, you can hear Moon Griffon right here from 9 to 11 on a Talk 107.3 FM. I got to remind you about LWCC before we get out of here. LWCC.com, they are Louisiana loyal, much like everything we talk about in this segment when we have the Ag Commissioner on. They are Louisiana loyal. They celebrate the champions of Louisiana. In fact, some of the past champions of Louisiana probably crossed paths with Ag Commissioner Dr. Mike Strain. Go to LWCC.com, pull up the Champions of Louisiana page, and learn a lot more there. All right, Dr. Strain, we got two more minutes before we get out of here. I'm pretty sure we covered just about everything that we wanted to cover for this time around. Outside of that, looking ahead, and just to kind of recap where we were with the heat,
I think
are we still okay?
Well, we're still okay. However, you need to check on loved ones. It's hot. You got to make sure that your pets have access to cool, fresh water, shade.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not used to the heat, don't put them out in the heat.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of animals, they can't re-thermoregulate that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for horses, you know, we tell them have shade, have barn, have fans. For cattle, have shading areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for your small animals. But again, cool, clean, fresh water. And if they're used to air conditioning, let them stay there. The other thing we got to be concerned about is mosquitoes.
Yes.
This is prime mosquito. You want to grow mosquitoes? This is when you do it. So we have the high heat, the high humidity, the constant rainfall, you know, the intermittent rainfall. So if you have a lot of water and a lot of heat, about 12, 14 days later, you get a lot of mosquitoes.
Yes.
And so the important part is that we monitor and we're watching for West Nile, Eastern, Western encephalitis, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, make sure that when you go out that you take the necessary precautions early morning, late in the evening, wear long sleeve shirts, protect yourself, use mosquito products with DEET in it, DEET, and make sure your horses are vaccinated and that you're, you know, especially your dogs on heartworm medicine, and make sure that's kept up because mosquitoes transmit those diseases. But be cognizant of mosquitoes. We're watching very closely, you know, for those different viruses. We have, you know, we work with mosquito control. LSU has the mosquito testing laboratories. But again, be cognizant of mosquitoes. Around your home, if you got plants that are holding water,
flip it over.
Flip it over or put sand in there.
Yep.
Any standing water. If you got that old bateau, flatboat, as you call it.
Yeah.
Right. Make sure you drain it. You know, standing water, old tires, old anything.
Yep.
That holds stagnant
tire,
water.
Drill a hole if you get a tire swing. Absolutely. He is Ad Commissioner Dr. Mike Strain. We're just straight up out of time. I greatly appreciate it, as always, sir.
Thank you.